This is The Anything Show with John Francois, featuring Andrew Vanderton.
Hey, John here from Colchester, Vermont. My good buddy Andrew Vanderton coming from Rochester, New York. Hello, Andrew.
Hola.
Oh, a fantastic show we have today. I will tell you why, Andrew. One, compared to last week's episode where I was recovering from nausea, I'm feeling so much better because I decided to listen to my body and actually take a day off of work this week. So I am feeling as crisp as the best fried chicken you've ever had in your life.
Oh, that was decades ago.
Oh, no. You haven't had good fried chicken since like 1995?
It's been a while, John. It's been a while. I'm in a fried chicken prison, but I remember it being delicious.
Well, the part of that is because you're vegan now, right?
Very true. Part of that is being vegan. And, you know, chicken hasn't gotten its way to vegan yet.
You know, they have the fake vegan version of chicken, though. I've heard they got the vegan nuggets.
It's like eating an eraser. It's not like chicken.
Well, I'm sorry for all you people who love to eat erasers as part of your diet. Andrew just offended you there. Thanks, Andrew.
It's okay, people. I tried it and it just wasn't for me.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Unfortunately, you cannot have good fried chicken, but fortunately, you told me that you were having a good time playing the Resident Evil game earlier this week.
Yes, it is phenomenal. It is one of my favorite games of all time, and I feel like a kid again playing.
So for someone like me who has no knowledge of video games, what is good about it?
So it is a terrifying game. You're in a zombie survival game, essentially. And it's terrifying because they purposely don't give you enough ammunition to kill as many zombies as you're going to encounter. And you have to figure out complex puzzles with maps and mazes and designs, all while trying to survive.
Wow.
It's my type of game.
And it's the type of game that would give me a headache because I'm the kind of person that's like, oh, I want to play ping pong. I want to play tennis. Like, I'm the person that played those simple Nintendo Wii sports games when I was growing up.
Oh, but John, those are some of the best games too. Like Wii Switch Sports, amazing.
Yeah. Just give me like some simple Pac-Man where I just go num 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 on some ghosts like we did in your home city of Rochester, and I am good to go.
Let's do it. Num noms.
Yes, indeed. No, I love that. That was a very fabulous, sexy way that you said that. Num noms. Because like a lot of people would be like, num 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 num, but you're like, no, num noms.
I feel like I would be a very classy Pac-Man. I would eat my little dot with a scissor and fork.
Oh, my God. I would love that. Classy Pac-Man. Let's come out with it, Andrew. Let's make some money.
We'll do it. I'll sell monocles.
I love it. Hey, we have a great show. Coming up later on, special guest. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Field of Dreams, Andrew.
Yes, I have.
So the father himself of Kevin Costner's character, Dwyer Brown, is my guest later on. He's going to be talking about not only Field of Dreams, I believe this year is the 35th anniversary of the film, but he is partially responsible for the opening of the Baseball Hall of Fame. I'm sorry, not the Baseball Hall of Fame. That's a lot bigger building in somewhere in upstate New York. I think it's like Yonkers or something like that. But the Baseball Hall of Dreams and the baseball building. So I think the Baseball Hall of Dreams is, basically telling us why there's heart and soul in baseball as it relates to Field of Dreams. And then the baseball building, if I'm not mistaken, highlights the achievements of minorities and people with disabilities in baseball. So it's really awesome.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Okay, I'm looking this up immediately.
Yeah, and also, remember last week when I told you, Andrew, that I did an interview on the toilet?
This is the interview.
This is the interview, yeah. So for Andrew and for you listening, I was very nauseous last week to the point of, like, I had to go to the bathroom, like, every 2 seconds, and I had this interview scheduled with Dwyer Brown. Little did Dwyer Brown know that I conducted this interview like a professional while doing my duty on the toilet. So if you hear any noises in the background, I apologize, but I don't think you should, because I think I was already finished and just sitting on the toilet by the time I talked to Dwyer. Too much info, Andrew? Too much info?
I'm laughing because I'm imagining, like, have you seen the statue, The Thinker? That was you on the toilet.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, so tell me about your baseball dreams. Well, that's basically what it was. My stomach doing twists and turns as I was trying to get into the inner thinking of baseball.
That is deep.
Oh, yeah. So it was what I released in the toilet, if you know what I mean. All right. Before we get to Dwyer Brown, I saw this list on Reddit, Andrew. People on Reddit, they're talking about the things that they no longer have any patience for. Now, I thought this list was perfect for us, Andrew, mainly because I know you. So you are a very happy, positive, go-lucky, friendly person. But boy, if people test your patience, you'll cut a bitch.
Yes, I will. And with like a good sport, because I want it to last.
Yes, cutting a bitch nice and slow and tender. You don't want to be quick with it. You want to take your time.
Yes, I want you to know my intent is to cut you.
There you go. So looking at the list of things that people don't have patience for anymore, and we'll talk about our thoughts on each of these. So number 15, the full-on memoir before every single online recipe. Now, this is exactly why I don't cook, Andrew. This is why Tony, my lovely fiance, cooks more passionately and more lovingly than I do. For me, it's like, oh, I want to have some crappy McDonald's scrambled eggs and just put it in my mouth. But Tony, like, she goes through like the whole pasta salad. She has carrots and potatoes and shepherd's pie. Like, she'll have the patience to look through like a big essay of an online recipe to figure out what new meal to make. And I can't do it. And it looks like you, Andrew, also don't have the patience for it.
I don't have the patience for it. Like, I'm one of those people, I love to cook, so I'll search recipe. And you get to this website, and it's like, oh, me and my darling love, we were in France in the Riviera, and I had a craving for fromage. So then he decided to cook for me. And there's like four paragraphs of the story of him cooking and his hair billowing. And then you finally get to the recipe at the end, and it's like, here's how you make a grilled cheese. It hurts.
It really does. I mean, you really want it to just be step one. Here's how you make a cheese. Step two, put it in your mouth. Like, that's all you want.
That's it. I just want something basic and simple. It's cute to see the food blogger stuff, but just take me to the recipe. I want the, what do you say, the money shot? That's what I want.
Wait, doesn't that relate to pornography? What? Wait, I'm so confused. The money shot doesn't just mean porn. It also pertains to, like, delicious online recipes.
I don't know if the term specifically refers to recipes and food, but I want to put something delicious in my mouth. So if we're going with money shot, I'm doing it.
Okay. So the money shot as it pertains to porn, I mean, if you want to put that in your food, that is your own thing. I personally will pass on that, but okay. Okay. As we move on to number 14, the airport. A lot of people don't have patience for the airport, understandably, especially when you have delays, layovers, all that crippity crap. I haven't been to the airport in a few years. When I used to live and work in Iowa, since I had to visit family in Connecticut, like that's when I was frequently, you know, going through airports and stuff like that. And during one of those visits, Andrew, all I remember, you know, waiting between layovers, whatever you call them, all I remember was like going to a Chick-fil-A restaurant at the Minneapolis airport and trying Chick-fil-A for the first time and just being like, ew, come on. This is just bland fried chicken and a pickle. Really? Like, these religious nuts think this is the best thing ever? This is worth not being open on Sundays for? What? Ew. That's all I remember from the airport. Now, what about you? I mean, do you have patience for the airport at all or whatever?
I personally love the airport. I love flying, and I love when I go to the airport and seeing all the people like busily rushing around, because I'll do like the people watching thing. And then also I wear like some cute airport fashion, like really baggy clothes and massive sunglasses for no reason.
Oh, my God. So you seem like the celebrity that's like dirty and tired and stressed, but they also seem fashionable. Like, oh, I just threw this on, but also with a lot of makeup.
Yes, it's like it looks like I got dressed in a garbage can, but I didn't.
It's a fashionable garbage can. It's a Louis Vuitton garbage can. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That's the fun of the airport. You get to people watch and just have cute clothes on.
Oh, yeah. Number 13 on the list of things that people don't have patience for: adults who act like high school kids, or really just kids in general. I can think of many people in my personal life that have acted like that. People who are in their mid-20s, 30s, 40s, whether they're still living at home or they may be living on their own, but they still have this mentality of like, I want my candy now. Well, no, you got to buy it. You got to get a job for it. I don't know if you have people like that in your life who are adults, but like, wow, you could be 12, but you're really 42.
It's very relatable, John. I used to have somebody in my life who was like that, where I was like, are you really an adult? I can't believe that you're in your 30s right now.
Yeah. And outrage culture, number 12. People point out that some of the memes that come from it are funny. I mean, we live in it. I mean, I guess you could put cancel culture in this category, the culture where people get outraged by every single thing. And it's a tricky thing because, you know, when we talk about things like, racism or trans rights, like taxes, like there are issues that, yes, deserve frustration and outrage. But are we going to get anywhere when we go on Twitter and say, you don't support my view on this, so therefore you should burn in hell?
It's a very scary time that we're in right now. I don't like outrage culture. I think that there has to be a word for it. I think social media is poison, so I really hope we just get rid of it one day.
Yeah, let's go back to having a mature conversation. Oh, you don't agree with me? Okay, let's talk about it. Let me tell you where I come from. I'm going to tell you where you come from. Let's see if we could try to find a compromise on how we feel about mice in churches.
Boom. Get those little squeakers out of there.
Or keep them in there because they're so cute and maybe they'll make a dress for Cinderella like in the movie I saw.
John, this sounds very scary to me. I feel like this could be a horror film.
Oh, are you actually afraid of mice or are you not a big fan of them?
No, mice don't scare me, but mice building a woman a dress in a church, this sounds like we're summoning Satan.
Yeah, I love it. Horror mouse coming into theater. Do you like that title, right? Horror Mouse. They're little and squeaky, but their nails and their little squeaky bodies can vomit out blood. I don't know. Horror Mouse, June 21st. Oh, boy. Hey, people who attempt to force their beliefs and opinions on you. Number 11. Well, you know, Andrew is speaking. we're black people. We've been raised with religious family members. I think we could say something a little bit personal about that.
Yeah.
And so you had a really interesting term for people like that.
I do. They're religious colonizers. They just come in and they just want to take over. And it's like, let me tell you about your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And it's like, okay, I just asked you what time it was.
Exactly. I just wanted to know when my food was coming out of the oven. I just wanted to know what time my bus was. And all of a sudden, you want to tell me how Jesus can save my life forever. Okay, back up now, Shirley.
I was just standing here for the food. That was it.
Exactly. And here's the thing. I mean, I've evolved my thinking. Like, for family members, friends, whoever, who may want to convert me into a religious thing, here's the thing. You have every right to believe what you believe. If it makes you happy, if it makes you fulfilled, great. Doesn't mean it's going to also work for me. If I choose not to convert into that, respect that choice and move on. Because I think there is this impression in certain religious people, not all of them, but certain, that, hey, this makes me happy, so that means it has to make the whole world happy. And if it doesn't make the whole world happy, they're not trying hard enough.
Yeah, it's just that. People think that they have the remedy for everybody, and it's like, it doesn't work for all of us. But I'm not faulting you for doing it. Have fun.
Yeah. Number 10 on the list of things that people don't have patience for. Of course, this kind of relates to the outrage culture that we were just talking about. People who go out of their way to pick fights with people or be jerks, especially online. Yeah, I mean, I have to look at what's trending on Twitter every day for my radio gig, Andrew. And God, it is just any topic that comes up trending on Twitter. Like, I don't know, I'll just give you something. Baseball. Oh, my God. Baseball. It's terrible. It's boring. It's homophobic. I hate it. It should drown in hell. Like, there's always a negative take for every single topic, no matter how positive and harmless it can be on Twitter.
Yeah. When you open your social, especially Twitter, Twitter is one of those ones. When I open it, I kind of feel like Satan walks right into the room. Like, he's just there and ready to go. No lube.
Oh, God. Okay. And you know what? Here's the thing, Andrew. I mean, you take part in a lot of satanic activity anyway. So I think that, like, the difference is that you do it by choice and it's fun and there's lube involved.
Exactly. There's lube and consent involved. And I am happy when I do it. But when you open up Twitter, it's like just there. And it's like, whoa, people. Like you said, baseball, it turns into 60 million tweets of hate that I didn't even know were a thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's just unconsensual and dry. And that's the worst non-consensualness, frankly.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, my God. Number 9 on the things on the list of things that people don't have patience for. Of course, this is understandable. Slow Wi-Fi. It happens at the house that I'm staying at in Vermont, Andrew. I mean, you know, the Wi-Fi is not the greatest. It goes in flips and flabs. It's that kind of Wi-Fi where it's like you'll have bars and then the next second it's like, wait a minute, why am I using data? I'm supposed to be using the Wi-Fi that is supposed to be in this house. So it can be kind of a drag, and of course the data sucks the battery out of your phone. But I'm not paying for it, so that's the big difference. I don't tend to complain when it's not paid for. If it's paid for, then yes, I'll be the first person calling the internet company, being like, hey, you know, please fix this, or else I'll fix you with Satan's lube.
So forceful, John. Go down there and spank those people and say, get my internet working now.
And I know better, Andrew, because I know that forceful is not the way to do it. You have to do it slow and nice and just gradual.
I wish that I could say I was that way with my Wi-Fi, but when it goes out and I like to game online, and if it goes out in the middle of me playing a game, I am on a warpath.
Yeah, because you're a very passionate gamer, and I think like 9 times out of 10, I mean, your progress is not saved when that happens, right?
A lot of times in certain games, you lose progress, or if you're playing with other people online, it pretty much interrupts the game for everybody.
I bet. All right, what do we got here? Number 8, people being on their phone while in a conversation with you. Now, my fiance Tony is very guilty of this, Andrew, but here's the thing. She's a great multitasker. Like, there will be many times where she's on the phone doing chores around the house, whatever, and I'm talking to her and I'm distracted by the fact that she's doing these other things. And she, at this point, is just kind of irritated by the fact that I stopped talking. She always reminds me, John, I can do things and listen to you at the same time. And she can't. I've seen it. She's fabulous at that. That being said, because of what I do for a living, I tend to be a self-centered whore. So it's like, all right, yes, I know you're still paying attention to me, but there's just something gratifying I like, or gratifying just in general, about getting like 110% of your full attention. Am I wrong of that?
I don't think you're wrong for that. You want people to gaze deeply into your eyes as you tell them your intent and information that you've been waiting to share. So I get it. I am the kind of person, though, I don't mind if somebody has their phone in their hand while we're talking. I don't make much eye contact in certain scenarios. So for me, it's like, you're fine.
Well, you're a better person than I am, Andrew. You're more patient. You're more kind. That's why people love you and gravitate around you like you're like some kind of cult leader.
That is fun. I want to start a cult. Let's do this, the cult of apples. Everybody has to eat an apple to join, because that keeps the doctors away.
Yes. Oh, my God. But what kind of apple? Is it going to be red or green?
Green. Granny Smith only. We do not welcome any other type of apple into this commune.
I swear, every time I talk to you, I find out how more alike you are to my fiance, Tony. She's a green apple person. I'm a red apple person. Do you like green grapes?
I love green grapes.
Oh, my God.
They're so good.
Okay. May I ask you to step away from the gay community and just convert to straight and just marry Tony instead of me? Because you guys are more alike than I ever imagined.
Tony knows green fruit is better. It just tastes amazing.
I guess. You know, we're going to move on because I like you too much, Andrew. We're going to move on. Number 7 of the things that people don't have much patience for: anything that has influencer in it. I mean, I guess people are just really annoyed about the whole social media influencer. Oh, I get paid $30 a minute to talk about why light switches are great on Instagram. That is annoying for some people. I mean, I guess it's annoying to you, Andrew. I mean, I think you seem to think that there's something like sketchy or cheap about the whole influencer term.
I do. Anytime I see like an influencer like selling like, oh, get my t-shirts or get these light bulbs, like I just imagine it's something very poorly made and they just get some kind of credit from it. And I just step away. I'm like, I don't want it. I'm not going to try it.
Right. It's like something that somebody made from their garage. Like, oh, I make my own tattoos, but I make it with rubber and glue. Like that kind of thing.
Yes, just like that. Something where you're like, I'm definitely going to get botulism if I ingest this product.
Yeah. Yeah. What is botulism again? Is that like getting plants in your butt, or is that something else? No, that's plastic surgery, isn't it?
Did you see of somebody getting a plant put in their butt? I need to know this.
I don't know, but when I hear bot, like it's like botany, right? Like a botanist is the guy who's a plant scientist, right?
Yes, the botanist is a plant scientist. Okay, I can see where you're going.
Do you? Because I don't.
I can see like some of you're like, oh well, they decided to plant an acorn in their left cheek.
Okay. So botulism is plastic surgery. It's like injecting Botox into somebody.
Well, botulism is the bacteria that's used in the Botox vaccine that causes nerve paralysis, but it can also be in food that's gone bad, and it can really harm your body if it's out of control.
Okay. You see, I wish you were my science teacher back in school, Andrew, because we used to have like smelly, boring, stale, old white guys. And if we had you, then, you know, science would have been much more fun.
You know, I would love to teach kids science. They would not know what to do with me. They'd be like, he's the best scientist ever.
Yeah. And then you'd, you know, be like, hey, you know, kids, let's explore the science of weed right now.
Yeah. I'd be like, kids, I'm going to show you how THC makes you very happy.
Yeah, exactly. Number six of the things that people are not patient for. I'm sorry. Did I burp? I didn't mean to burp. People who burp and don't say excuse me. That should be another one on the list. But no, six is people who constantly blame others for the situation they are in. Yes, Andrew. And this is something that I really learned a lot about in therapy. I remember having a coworker back in the day who had a major victim complex. I mean, this guy was negative and bitchy about every single thing. I mean, look, I'll be honest. You know, he is one of those people that voted for Trump. I mean, he's that crowd that Trump appealed to where he felt like the world had it out for him, that, you know, everything is against him and nothing's going right for him and the status quo doesn't pay attention to him, like that kind of thing. And he just didn't know that, like, hey, like, you're responsible for your own happiness. Like, you're not helping anybody, and you're certainly not helping yourself by being mopey and gropey and whining about, you know, how little money you make at work. Well, hey, maybe start with not buying alcohol and cigarettes every day. Like, I don't know. It'd be people like that with that victimization complex, and they clearly could have a way to turn that around. You know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. I used to have a close friend who was that way, where everything in the world that happened was never that person's responsibility. When there's times where you have to look at it, like, you wouldn't have been late to work if you decided to just wake up earlier. You wouldn't have had these issues. You can't keep blaming somebody else for the things that are within your control.
Exactly. Oh, well, no, I would have woken up on time for work if I was paid more, you know, if traffic was better. And it's like, no, let's start with you actually setting your alarm when you're supposed to.
Right. It's some of those things that are, even I love it when I, in therapy, sometimes I'll call myself out for it and just be like, no, I'm making an excuse for the behavior of where I'm putting myself as opposed to stop that. You can just handle it and get it over with as opposed to blaming the entire world for your issue.
Absolutely. People who litter, number five, I am guilty. And this is, keep in mind that we're talking about this, like, what, a few days after Earth Day. You're going to hate me, Andrew, because I know you're Mr. Kumbaya with the environment. I can sense that energy from you. And I'd like to be Kumbaya about the environment, but, you know, I'm a selfish prick. I mean, I'm the kind of guy that just irresponsibly throws my trash out the window whenever it best suits me. I throw paper in the trash instead of the recycling bin. You know, when I'm around my fiance Tony's presence, I dare not do any of those things because she is very, very passionate about making sure that the environment is taken care of. So, go ahead. You could lecture me, Andrew. Go ahead.
I hate litter. I hate when I see people litter. I always tell people, would you throw garbage on the ground inside of your own home? And if the answer is yes, that still makes you just the baddest person for littering because you are just throwing garbage into the animals' homes. and all that garbage. It does all these things. It gets into our bodies. That's why we all have plastic in our poop. If you look it up, it's true. We all have plastic in our body because people have littered and destroyed the environment.
You know,
that's my preaching.
Okay. So that's a valid point. But boy, man, you put that imagery in my head. Wouldn't it be great to like actually have like plastic poo, like poo come out as plastic bags? That would be great.
I mean, it could be an interesting thing. I feel like it'd be a little hard to push sometimes, but
that would be an understatement, Andrew. I think it would be very, very hard to. Well, actually, you know what? No. I mean, if you think about the lightweight of plastic bags, it might be okay. I mean, it might feel weird coming out, but it might be okay. I'm sorry. I turned this conversation into what it's not meant to be, which is an insult on the environment. I apologize. This is why you cannot have a serious conversation with me, Andrew. Like, you know, we got to talk about like gun control. Well, can you poop guns out on the toilet? That would be cool. Like that's the kind of person that I am.
Yep, it's understandable.
I know. Waiting on people who are constantly late to plans. Number four. So it looks like you and I, Andrew, are the same person. You claim that you're always late, so you're guilty of this.
Oh, I'm late. My friends all know if I have to be someplace, they tell me to be there 2 hours earlier than the expected time.
So is this just an us thing as individuals, or is it because we're black and this is AKA colored people time?
You know what? For me, it's just because I'm one of those people. I've got to get my vibe right before I leave the house. And it sounds so Gen Z and I love it. But I have to like have my little pregame before I leave the house to go do something. And sometimes that runs into my promptness to the event.
Yeah. Yeah. Here, my thing is, if it's like not a super urgent thing, if it's like a little bit loosey goosey, then yeah, I'll take my time. And you know, Toni is very punctual. She is not someone who likes to be late. So for example, like the other Sunday when we were going out for lunch, she's like, I would prefer to go out to lunch before 2. Like she was very punctual at that. And I'm just like, oh my God, it's the weekend. I want to take my time. And I really do take my time, Andrew. I take like 2 hours in the bathroom, you know, showering, shaving. I like to meditate afterwards. I like to find clothes. Like I really, really take my time. And if I wanted to, I could be like 10, 15 minutes tops, but that's just rushing and that's just hurriedness and that's just not good for my mental health. I like to ease into my stuff. And yes, that may lead to me being late to things and making Toni roll her eyes.
It's okay. It's a thing that if you are that type of person, you'll understand it. If you're not, you're just not going to get it. I am the same way. I like to linger and lounge. I've worked all week. Let me have my lazy moment.
Exactly. That's the key thing there. You know, if it's especially if it's the weekend, you and I, we, you know, have busy jobs. If we're coming from a hard week of work and we want to go out to lunch, we make plans with somebody. Great. But if they're like, oh, we got to be at this time. Do we really have to be there by 2:30? Do we really have to be there by 12? Or is it just because you just, you know, have this thing in your mind that, you know, if we're not there by the usual lunch hours, then all hell breaks loose. No, we got time. Chill. We got time.
Yes. What happened to be fashionably late?
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody wants to be unfashionably early. That's how wars start, I think. Right.
Yeah. That's what the French did to the Martians.
Really? Is that an actual story?
No, Mars. We haven't made it there yet, but the French are going to do it.
Okay. All right. Well, when we get to that story, let me know. That seems very interesting. People who text and drive. Now, you don't have patience for these kind of people. And I get that because, of course, that leads to accidents. Me, as someone who has a history of a billion car accidents, I should know. And actually, you know what? I will say this. Texting and driving, I have conceded to the fact that I'm not good at that. So I have not done that lately in a while. What I will do, if I'm not satisfied with whatever I'm listening to on Spotify, like while I'm driving, I will constantly like shift through my options while I should be focusing on the road to see what is there, what's not there. So, I mean, is that another version of texting and driving?
Yes.
Oh, darn.
If you have your hands off of the wheel at any point, unless this is to like drink something and put your hand right back to me, that is one of the most irritating things in the world.
but I only have one hand away from the wheel. I have one hand on the wheel and one hand on my phone. So people have done well driving with one hand on the wheel. Come on, Andrew.
No, they haven't. People have not done well.
Okay.
They have gotten lucky, but they have not done well. My biggest fear is to die in a car accident, and nothing irritates me more with the fact that I cannot control everybody else on the road. And texting and driving, I hate it. I've been hit by a car twice. I don't want it to ever happen again.
And was it because of texting and driving?
Yeah. The one time I was riding my bike, this guy was coming out of a Burger King parking lot and hit me full on because he was texting on his phone. And the other time it happened, I was riding my bike again, going through an intersection, and I had the right of way, and this guy hit me from the back.
Wow. Well, I knew from the get-go that I was never going to win that argument. So, yes, texting and driving, it's a big no-no. Listen to Andrew. Do not listen to dumb plastic bag poo-poo John over here. Can that be my nickname now?
Poo-poo plastic. That just sounds very strong.
Yes, yes. It sounds very wrong, but oh, boy, does it sound so right. Oh, boy. Working outside of work hours, number two. Yeah, I think we've all had those jobs, Andrew, where, they call you to work on, say, a weekend, like whatever time or day you usually don't work. And you're just like, oh, God, what does she want? Like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's an unfortunate reality in radio. I mean, the great thing about radio is that like we have connection with the community that we're serving to. So often we're out at events making appearances. But the downside is that, sometimes it takes away from the downtime that we would normally like to spend with our family, friends, significant others,
Yes, yes. I don't mind it if it's something that I want to do. Like if it's a pre-planned after work event that we have to do, perfectly fine. But if it's like spur of the moment, it really grinds my gears.
Yeah. I totally get it. And number one, finally, family drama. Yep, everybody can relate to it. A lot of people don't have patience for family drama these days. I mean, that is probably one of the big reasons why I am very glad that I am no longer living at home. I love my family. Don't mind visiting them at all every now and then. But sometimes it just gets to a point where there is drama, where there's a certain codependent bubble where there's just arguments over the same stupid stuff, and you just got to say, I'm grown, I need to go out and do my own thing, find my own happy space, and I'm all the better for it.
100%, John. I don't like family drama. I hate it. The last big argument a group of my family had, my uncles and aunts were arguing about should men wear jeans to church, and it got personal.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I'm out. I took my food and I left. I didn't want to be around it.
Was that really something they were passionately arguing about?
Oh, you would have thought somebody was going to get punched in the face with how loud they were, and people were visibly upset. And I'm like, this is so much, and I couldn't handle it. I had to go outside.
So what's the argument for and what's the argument against, and who was arguing for it and who was arguing against it? I'm curious.
So the argument four is that people should be able to come to church dressed however they are and, just present themselves to the Lord and have a great time at church. Then the other side is, well, it's disrespectful to come in here with jeans on. You're not respecting God. You're not respecting the, what do they call it? The congregation. You're being disrespectful to the church itself. And some of my aunts and uncles were on both sides of it. And I was just like, this is too much, y'all.
I love how they seem to believe that God has a sort of judgment call. It's like, oh, if you wear jeans, then you're not actually genuinely worshiping me. It doesn't matter. It doesn't count if you're wearing this clothing. No, like that's their thought process. Do I have that right?
Yes, that is their thought process. Amazingly, earlier this week, I wasn't even expecting to talk about this. I heard somebody say that Christianity and the influence of the church is a lot like the Taliban that we used to be advertised and made afraid of when the war was happening there.
Yeah.
So it's weird to see how people get passionate about these things.
Wow. Well, if you have a passionate opinion for or against jeans at church, feel free to let us know. Or any other topics on the list of things that people don't have much patience for, as according to Reddit. Let us know. You can reach out to us at Anything Show Francois, Instagram and TikTok, Facebook.com/TheAnythingShow. Andrew, I dare you to correctly identify your socials this time.
I am probably not going to be able to do it right.
How do I know your socials better than you do?
It's terrible, John, because I never actually look at any of my social content. Like, it's there, and I know that I can log into the apps, but I never actually view my own page. But I know on TikTok, it is AJ_Vandertime.
Mm-hmm.
And on Instagram, it's AJ Vandertime.
Yay! You know? That's all we need to know. Because the people love you, Andrew. They would like to reach out to you. They love, love, love hearing about your opinions on everything from texting and driving to Satan's lube.
Oh, a little spicy jalapeno pepper. I like it.
Yeah, oh, God. Oof. Oof. Yeah, now that, for some people, that might be the pepper of Satan. That seems very hot just talking about it. I can feel the spiciness in my tongue.
John, the next time I see you, I'm going to have to give you some jalapeno moonshine.
Oh, whoa. All right. Well, first of all, you got me at moonshine. I've heard that moonshine could really, really make you vomit. Is it going to like get me to the level of the Rumple mental steel skin shots that we had in Rochester a few weekends back?
Well, you know, you can use moonshine to run a car like gasoline. So I think you'll enjoy it.
Are you serious? You can actually put that into a car and have it run?
Yes, you can. I mean, hillbillies make it in a bathtub in the forest, and then they give it to you. All delicious, and it's delicious, John. Don't worry. I will give you moonshine in an acceptable amount where you will not be sick.
You know, it's funny because I've always associated the tough, manly, whiskey-like drinks with tasting like gasoline, and to find out that there's a drink that can actually make your car run, that is fascinating to me, but it also frightens me. I mean, it will probably taste good when I actually taste it like the night of, but man, I think if I taste a little bit too much of it, I'll probably have quite a morning.
You know what? You probably will.
Okay.
That's why with moonshine, you get in a mason jar. You can always save it after taking a little hit of it, and you're good to go. And there's like apple pie and fruit punch flavors.
There you go. Apple pie and fruit punch flavors for all the kids out there that want to start drinking early. I hope they don't. I really hope they don't. Let's put that PSA out there. Kids, drink responsibly at a responsible age. Do not drink at like 12. I hope not.
Only drink juicy juice until you turn 25.
Exactly.
Don't even touch anything else.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like, kids, they want to be adults when they're kids. And then once we get to adult stage, we just want to be back to being kids.
Yes. I wish I was a kid who had a salary. I would have been in heaven.
Right? Oh, my God. Imagine being a kid and even making like $15,000 a year. You would think you're a millionaire. Imagine what you would do with that money. No responsibility. You don't have to pay any bills. You still live under mom and dad's house. What?
Oh my God, right. I would go to school with like a wad of hundreds and be like, there's an essay due on the fishermen in the sea. I expect it by Tuesday.
I love it. Oh boy. Well, thank you for the Anything Show. Who am I thanking? I guess I'm thanking us for putting it on. I don't know. I'm trying to segue to Dwyer Brown because that is my infamous toilet interview. Creepy ASMR. You want to do that, Andrew?
Creepy ASMR. I'm down.
All right, here we go. And I'll incorporate some of our themes in this conversation tonight, okay?
I like it.
Here we go. Satan's lube. Fried chicken. nervousness and kids don't drink at 12 and spicy pepper moonshine. bye bye Good.
So, of course, I loved you as Kevin Costner's father in Field of Dreams. Before we get to the Baseball Hall of Dreams and the baseball building that you have developed, can you tell me, prior to your appearance in that film, what was your personal connection to baseball?
Gosh, I played Little League Baseball and ironically on the White Sox team in little Sharon Center, Ohio. And I got cut from my freshman high school baseball team. And my joke to all those guys is that it's my face that's in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
And how did you feel getting cut from that freshman team? I mean, was that a memory that carried over to you as you were shooting Field of Dreams?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I write about in my book, my very first experience with baseball was, you know, I was 5 years old. My mom came out to show my brother and sister and I how to play. And she ended up hitting me with the baseball bat and I got 9 stitches in the inside of my mouth. But, you know, and then I went on to Little League and then getting cut from the, high school baseball team. I mean, I played softball and on, you know, restaurant leagues and stuff since then. And, you know, I have loved the game, but, you know, I didn't have an auspicious beginning. And, I was the youngest kid on my class. So, you know, I blame it on being a little underdeveloped at that age.
Right, right. And if I'm not mistaken, as you were filming Field of Dreams, and you know, the theme of the movie, I mean, it's a big part of it is the ghost of Kevin Costner's father, which is you. And then I believe in real life, your dad passed away during the filming. Do I have that correct?
Yeah, actually. And I'd already been cast in the movie and I was visiting my folks in Ohio on our farm. And my dad unexpectedly died 36 days before I ended up going to Iowa. So it obviously made it a much different experience for me, but I hope that his memory lives on in the some little way in the movie. But yes, yeah, sad tragedy.
Yeah, right, right. And you know, being a former actor myself, I've had sort of middle of the road, difficult experiences with using stuff from my personal life to influence a character that I'm portraying. So I can only imagine, like, what was that like? I mean, this big theme of the movie and how it sort of related to what you were going through in your personal life. I mean, there may have been some shooting days where it was just absolutely impossible to be in that environment.
Yeah. Well, you would understand as an actor, because, you know, obviously I was, you know, so sad that my father passed, but I knew I had to go shoot this movie where, you know, a dead father's coming out of the cornfield to play catch with his son. And I thought, gosh, I'm just not going to be able to hold it together. I'm going to completely fall apart. And, you know, in fact, sort of the opposite happened. You know, my dad had a pretty rough life. And when he died, as much as I was, you know, trying to find the tears, I sort of felt that my father had been freed from this, you know, very difficult life and the depression and World War II and kind of an abusive father. And so there was kind of a lighthearted, I sort of imagined my dad as a hummingbird. He was, you know, flying out to Saturn and he'd fly back and buzz around me with all this kind of joy. And so that made it difficult in another way. So yeah, it was difficult to kind of, reconcile those two things that were happening simultaneously in my life.
Right. Can you talk about being in the community of Dyersville, Iowa, while the film was being shot? I mean, did you guys, as you know, the actors and producers and whatnot, and also did the community have a sense that this would be a film that would still be talked about more than 30 years later?
Well, you know, what's interesting is, none of the cast stayed in Dyersville. It's a very small town and there weren't hotels or anything. So we all stayed in Dubuque, which is about a half an hour east. And so we didn't have too much interaction with the town itself. I came into town a few times for breakfast on off days, but you know, none of us had cars, of our own to kind of get around. But, the cast, you know, I think we all did it because it was such a beautiful script and based on, you know, the novella Shoeless Joe, it was just a beautiful story. And you don't come across too many of those in Hollywood. The town, you know, I don't know if people know, but in that final scene where there's all the headlights going off into the distance, you know, now they would make that with CGI in like 2 minutes. But that was actually 3,000, you know, Dyersville locals in 1,500 cars, you know, stretched out. And so, you know, the movie was a big deal to them. And I still, whenever I'm in town there, I have, you know, half the town tells me, hey, that was me in car number 37. And, you know, it's really touching that the movie, you know, obviously still means so much to them. And, you know, I think for us, this long legacy of you know, great, this movie has been a wonderful, iconic thing for all of us.
Yeah. And I mean, you clearly are evoking the sentiment from that movie with the Baseball Hall of Dreams, the baseball building. Can you tell us about the evolution of that? Because as you're saying, I mean, these projects that you developed, you know, you think it really brings out the heart and soul of baseball.
Yeah. I mean, it's strange that it, you know, as from being in the movie, I've done many events out in Dyersville for different things, the 25th anniversary and all kinds of things. And there was this building downtown that was just, you know, beautiful old limestone building from 1860 that was, you know, kind of fallen into disrepair. There was a hole in the roof, you know, and I kept seeing year to year when I've gone to town, I think, why isn't somebody buying this beautiful old building and fixing it up? And, you know, I sort of had this Ray Kinsella vision that was supposed to be my building. You know, I envisioned a little sign on the corner, a little bar sign that said Kinsella's. So I thought, well, you know, I ended up talking my partner into buying this building. And, you know, we've been working on it for a couple of years now, you know, patching it up. And, you know, it's been a big, big job. But, you know, then, you know, we decided to open this Baseball Hall of Dreams to kind of celebrate the heart and soul of baseball. And, you know, we've signed a lease now with the If You Build It exhibit, which is the museum about the making of the movie. And they moved over into our building now. So we've called it the baseball building. We've got a third museum that's going to open next year and a batting center. And we're going to planning on opening a restaurant. And so it's going to be it's going to be a great center for fun in Dyersville, which, you know, is just for me a way to give back to these, you know, wonderful people in Dyersville who helped us shoot the movie, you know, 35 years ago and also, you know, have been just very supportive ever since.
So my time with Dwyer Brown had to be cut short. He had a billion other interviews he had to do that day. Nonetheless, though, it was great having him on to talk about Field of Dreams, the Baseball Hall of Dreams, the baseball building. Go check out those attractions in person. I highly recommend it. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The Anything Show with John Francois on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. Join us on YouTube, facebook.com/TheAnythingShow, and Instagram and TikTok @AnythingShowFrancois.